The sound of praise for your Sunday morning.
The only one who could ever teach me.
Introducing Reverend A.R. Bernard of the Christian Cultural Center.
Was the son of a preacher man.
And Rabbi Joseph Potasnik of Religion on the Line.
The only one who could ever teach me.
Now, on Talk Radio 77 WABC, here's the Reb and the Rabbi, where faith matters.
Good morning, I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
Reverend, when are we not going to hear the following words? Too close to call. I am tired of that phrase, and I'm looking forward to a day when we talk about building rather than tearing down. We talk about, you know, coalescing rather than, you know, excluding. We need to get beyond this point.
You know, I will tell you something. It was 11:26 a.m. Saturday that I was actually engaged in a video shoot for a program that I got the message that it was announced that Joe Biden will be the 46th president of the United States. You know, they're still contesting some counts mm-hmm. that have to be made in other states. Right. You know, and of course, you know, all of the rhetoric, the tension that led up to this election day and this election result led us to believe that there would be this anarchy in the streets across America. And you know what? It didn't happen like that.
Yeah. The only thing that I found what very troubling is you walk through the streets of New York and you know the days before the election, day of the election, you saw these stores being boarded up.
Sure.
And I don't ever recall that in my history of being fearful of an election result. And, you know, there are all kinds of interpretations of that. You know, if Joe Biden didn't win, we'd have riots, and there were those say it's going to go the other way. But you know, either way, the fact that we had to board up businesses, that people were afraid of what would happen after an election when we pride ourselves in being this democratic country, that to me was not a proud moment.
Yeah, I know, but it's not unique. I mean, we look back in American history. You know, look during the time of Woodrow Wilson. Issues were the same, where the Ku Klux Klan had a 50,000 person rally in Washington, D.C. in 1925. They were concerned about the same things, white identity, economics. You know, you had fears amongst blacks and Jews. You know, we were involved in a war overseas. I mean, you know, it is not unique to the American journey, the American historical experience.
But you'd like to think it's unique to the modern American journey, that here we've come so far in terms of expanding our knowledge, and yet sometimes we're closed-minded to a person who thinks differently. I have a friend of mine who said to me, look, I can support a candidate. Why do people hate me? Hate me? Because I'm supporting that candidate. Why am I told, if you're going to come with your political views to the Thanksgiving table, we'd rather you not come? And people have been warned, don't bring politics to the Thanksgiving table. There is this vitriol. There is this viciousness. That's what I find very, very disturbing, that we still have not reached a point where civility rules. There are too many people who are on this destructive path, and God forbid you take a different route, you're going to be subjected to you know, some ugly rhetoric.
And you know, look, here's the reality. You and I understand this. The world is a lot more complicated than conservative or liberal ideologies, right or left or center. Humanity is very complex, and to think that one set of ideologies will solve everything mm-hmm. is wrong. And you don't understand American history, because we have been a dual political economy throughout our history. You know, we've cheered and celebrated free enterprise and business, and at the same time we have rallied together in the face of crisis when there was a need for social response. You know, that's real. That's who we are. But the rhetoric has created so much fear that people are being led by emotions instead of critical thinking.
You know, someone said, kidding, but it's more than kidding. I think it has an ounce of truth in it and said, well, we talk in the Middle East of a two-state solution. Maybe we need that in America.
Watch it there, Rabbi. You'll have some states looking to see from the Union again. We don't want that.
I mean, we talk about the red and the blue, and God forbid, you have a conversation where you try to convene and bring both sides together. Mm-hmm. And you and I, our history is one of cooperation. We always are looking to make sure that as many voices as possible are heard at the gathering, at that meeting. And to think that people are going to be excoriated just because they have a different, that to me is so offensive that you can't select a candidate and say, I'm comfortable with this candidate. You may not be, but you don't have to hate me because I like the candidate. That hatred. It's not like love your neighbor, it's loathe your neighbor who votes a certain way. And that to me is not where we need to be.
Yeah, and what informs our thinking has changed. I was listening to a speech by John Meacham, he's a historian.
Yeah, historian.
And he said we're living in an era highly influenced by entertainment. And it's true, because we have news as entertainment. Most of our young people, and I've talked to them, they don't go to mainstream media to get their news. They go to comedians who are giving their take on the news. So it could be The Daily Show. It could be, late night talk show host.
And
that's where the young people. And what's true about getting their news, it's also true about what's informing their politics. This has been an era where politics has been entertainment. And that's not good, for our society. We don't think critically like that.
And social media has been a blessing and a curse. Because, there are people, I always refer to them as the computer commandos, or, they're committed to the computer, who will send out all of the ugly stuff without fact checking, or they think because they have a few people on their listserv that they're a major contributor to world affairs. And it just makes the situation worse, not better. They're not looking to make it better. So that's why we have a responsibility. Constructive dialogue. That's where we need to go in this next period. We need to get people, we need to convert that thinking that you're not going to get anywhere with the ugliness. You want to build, we're here. Critic, be a constructive critic. Otherwise, stay outside.
Well, I'm going to quote from the Hebrew scriptures in what we call it Ecclesiastes. Please do, right? What we call Ecclesiastes. And it basically says that, if I may paraphrase, change does not come from the extreme. It comes from the median. Because the extremes may become catalysts for change, but the actual change takes place at the center, where we sit down and have reasonable conversation and plan out how we can address the needs on both sides. And that's real.
Listen to the wisdom. We always say, listen to the wisdom of those who preceded you. Listen to the wisdom of those who are more knowledgeable than you. You are not the all-knowing, omniscient human being. So I hope we reach a point where we recognize that the other person may have a valid point of view as well. We have an interesting guest today, someone that we've come to really know and respect, and his name is David Buckner. It's Elder David Buckner of the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints. And talk about change over the years and coming a long way. Look at where that church was and where it is today, and how people have worked very, very hard
to include
them in the circle. Yeah.
And he is a member of the board of the Commission of Religious Leaders that you and I and the Cardinal are the executive leadership on. And, he's brought a lot of contribution to our efforts here in the city of New York.
Yeah, we've advocated for him to be at the table, as we have for others. Again, we're not the only voices in the room. Let's listen to others. So I look forward to that discussion.
Yeah, it's going to be a great discussion. In fact, coming on the heels of a press conference that we did, because he, as we'll talk about in our interview, we collaborated to boost up our food pantry feeding program for both our New York City and our Long Island campuses.
And also, he goes beyond the Christian community.
I mean, and he's helped you guys, right?
Yeah, he made outreach to the Jewish community in terms of helping them. All right.
Yeah.
When we come back, sure. Elder David Buckner.
where faith matters. The Rev and the Rabbi. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
Reverend, you and I have been privileged to know many people over the years. We call them acquaintances or friends. Today we have someone who really is a special friend, and I consider him to be a member of the extended interfaith family. And I'm talking about Elder David Buckner of the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints. And really, it's been a great experience learning about him and also about the church, because for too long, we knew too little about it. So this is an opportunity to really broaden our knowledge and get to include someone in more of our conversation. So welcome, Elder David Buckner.
Pleasure to be here. Good to be with both of you.
Yeah, and to what Rabbi said about not knowing much, I mean, there's a period of time that the Latter-day Saints, the Mormon theology was pretty closed. Isn't that correct, Elder?
I think you're right, and I don't know that it's closed. I mean, you send 67,000 people around the world to communicate their faith, and it's interesting because they're still less known sometimes, even with a proselytizing effort over the decades, you know, and yet you come to recognize that just simply knocking on a door or trying to communicate with a tract or a discussion doesn't always communicate the tenets of the faith or even provide an understanding of the faith. So I think you're spot on that we've not communicated it well.
So let me ask you this. We introduced you as Elder David Buckner. I know Reverend Bernard is always introduced as one of the elders in the room. But you have that official title, Elder. What is that? Talk about that in the governance structure.
Yeah, the governance structure is pretty simple, and we refer to it often as a restoration of the governance structure that existed with Christ Church at the time that he was here on the earth. So you have prophets and apostles, and then you have and these are lay ministers, if you will. You have a next layer, which are known as the 70. And the 70, as you go back to ancient writ, are referenced there, are those that would go out and preach. And the title elder is given to those that represent the 70. My geography is the greater New York metropolitan area, but many geographies around the world, there's about 290 of us, or a total of 350 when you count those that sit in Salt Lake. And that title of elder resides with those, as well as using the title elder with the members of the Quorum of the 12. Then you have others like bishops and other titles that are associated with more local congregations.
You know, Reverend Bernard, when he's called elder, I feel like they should call us ancient. He's one of the youngest elders I've ever seen.
Well, in that tradition, we have elders in our church, and these are the senior leaders that help the pastoral oversight over particular areas and, of course, over the whole congregation. So it's shared. There's so many different structures within Protestantism and so many denominations and breakdowns within Protestantism. You know, LDS goes back, over 100 years to the early part of American history and in terms of their growth and development. But they've gone through an evolution, and I'm not speaking scientifically. I mean, culturally, I mean, theologically, because at one time, issue of race was part of the LDS journey, correct?
Yeah, and it's interesting as you reference that. We're 200 years now is what we call the celebration of what we reference as the first vision, or the vision that Joseph Smith, the modern day founder, a restorer prophet, first prophet in this dispensation, 200 years ago received his first vision. So you talk about a 200 year history, you're exactly right, Reverend Bernard. And during that time frame, we've gone through not only the Joseph Smith era, but the movement of the saints from the eastern states to the west and passing through Missouri, where we had the extermination order, where Mormons were to be killed at the time. And I mean, there's a rich tapestry. And you are spot on in noting that as they moved, there was also a lot of cultural and even political history in the United States at the time. Mm-hmm. And from 1852 to 1978, there was indeed some limitation on ordinances. and priesthood engagement that took place. But fortunately, for the last 42 years, and you know, we look at a broad embrace and a necessary move to engage more, not only socially, but ecclesiastically and spiritually in our faith.
So has that theology changed with regard to the original understanding of the Genesis curse of Cain and curse of Ham? Has that theology changed?
So that's a great question when it relates to those principles of where it came from. What was doctrinal versus policy? We know with clarity that there was practice of priesthood members of all races and creeds during the time of Joseph Smith, receiving the priesthood and engaging in all the ordinances. And for the season that I referenced previously, the practice of not providing that was not a doctrinal shift. And many of those doctrinal attributions that are given to some of the historical references have not been validated or verified as part of our doctrine. It's an interesting time frame in which, you know, you go back, and I remember as a young child living in Sacramento, California, and my father came in and told me, he said, the greatest blessing of all is that all members of the church will have access to and receive the blessings of not only the ordinances of temple and priesthood, et cetera, but all will have access to what, you know, God has given us. And it was a celebration in our home because it was that had been previous to that was no longer.
So Elder Buckner, you mentioned an extermination order. Why? What threat was posed by the Mormons?
We were a dominant community, and as you can even understand, when an entire community moves into a state or into an area and starts to populate that area, there was great trepidation and concern amongst the populace. And in Missouri, there was a point in time in which the Mormon community, I referenced that because that was the nickname that we were given and even attributed to ourselves at the time. They were viewed as almost coming into an area and taking over. There was a concern about their political engagement. Would they be able to sway elections? Would they have religious views that would be contrary to the community? So when they came in Missouri, there was great trepidation and concern such that Lilburn Boggs, the governor, declared an extermination order that you could kill a Mormon on sight. And that went until the 1970s on the books. And the reason being is they were terrified. In the spirit of what we see today, that the fear over faith is what causes many people to knee-jerk respond. And I don't blame people for their fear, because we were a large group. I mean, Nauvoo, Illinois was the largest city, larger than Chicago at a time. And that was all populated by members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So you can understand why the fear, but the extermination order was something we've never seen and yet should never be compared to what you see in the Jewish faith and others that have gone through huge, monumental changes in approaches to them that have led to just devastating and heinous deaths and persecution.
You know, it's amazing the number of stories that exist in the American journey of groups of people trying to assimilate into American society. We think that it's just amongst blacks or Indians or Asians, but even within the white population of America, there were issues of acceptance and assimilation into the society, whether it's because of ethnic differences, religious differences. You know, it's a fascinating history when we begin to look at it and understand it in the light of that struggle.
That's a very thoughtful view of that as you look at that, because this was a moment in time in our history where we may have been seen as very, I don't know, frontier-like, you know, ambitious American, and we weren't. So it's a very insightful view, and it's not an easy one to overcome.
All right, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned, more of The Rev and the Rabbi.
The Rev and the Rabbi skillfully unites religions, faiths, and all people into the most compelling and thought-provoking dialogue each week. Hosted by internationally esteemed pastor, Reverend A.R. Bernard, and renowned rabbi, Joe Potasnik, the Rev and the Rabbi invites everyone from various professional backgrounds and platforms to join the conversation as they discuss how faith fits into our everyday lives.
Welcome back to The Rev and the Rabbi. I'm Rabbi Joseph Tasman.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
You were pulled into part of that manifest destiny of American expansion, westward expansion. And, you know, there were certain views on that. So it's just, I'm fascinated by American history. I love this country. And it's an incredible experiment that continues to this day.
So, Reverend Bernard, you and I, we've had discussions about bringing more people into the arena, expanding the circle, finding room for others. And when the issue came up of the Mormon Church, I remember one of the comments made was, well, there, and I mentioned this to you, Elder Buckner, when we met some time ago, it was almost like an insular spirit, like there wasn't this determination to become part of the larger. I mean, we had I think almost pull you along and say, come on, we want you at the table. You need to be there. You were very appreciative, but it came from our desire to include you. It wasn't like a push from the other side. Am I right or wrong of that?
No, I think you're right that we are probably not our best public affairs committee. The reality of there's 16 million members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in 190 countries. I mean, we have the United States, Mexico, and Brazil, and followed up quickly by the Philippines, have the largest congregations. It's a global entity, and yet many people know very little about it. And here locally, when you were so gracious, and I mean both of you were so kind to encourage it, you know, there was I always come with the idea, what can I bring to the table? What can I do to help? How do I provide solutions rather than coming to the table with wants? And you were so gracious to say, look, bring your solutions, bring your wants. We need every voice at the table because then it creates a full tapestry. And it's that welcoming that invited us in. And candidly, I think we've got to do better at communicating. What are our tenets? What do we believe? How are we similar? And I can't tell you how grateful I've been to have you two good individuals that are friends, but we've got many others that sit around the table that provide a really brilliant tapestry of what people of faith are and what they can do.
Yeah, I think it's part of maturing in your faith. As you really mature in your faith, you begin to appreciate and embrace the solidarity of the human family, that we're all stamped with the image of God. We're all connected in some way, in spite of our religious tradition differences, our cultural and ethnic differences. What we are, part of the human family. And I think that, you know, that's hopefully where we as a society are headed here in America and hopefully around the world.
Yeah. Agreed. I think as a part of that, and Rabbi Potasnik, you know this, our commonalities as people of faith are much more evident than our differences. It's amazing how that aligns.
I remember being out at Salt Lake City and meeting many of the prominent leaders of the church. And when I said to them, look, there's room for you. We make room. We have a responsibility. We have a religious responsibility to be inclusive. And I remember the reaction. Wow. It was like, you've given us this blessing. This is fantastic. And I can tell you, we've been enriched by the presence of your body, you know, at our meetings, of all of the programs we've collaborated on throughout the years, we're better, you're better, which shows you that, you know, when we say one is not a team and we need as many people as possible with constructive voices, meaning the critics, critics abound. We can always find people who will knock us. But to be able to sit at a table and to listen to people who have this important input is something that I greatly appreciate, because I know what it is to be on the other side. Reverend Bernard knows what it is to be, you know, on the other side. We were excluded for a long time, and therefore we are very sensitive to those who have not been included.
Well, Rabbi, I don't know if I've been bettered yet because I haven't been invited to Salt Lake City to sit down and have those conversations. So
I'll get you. Look,
I'm
you need a rabbi.
To getting to becoming better here. You know,
you need a rabbi to get you that invitation. I will take care of it.
Of course, I need a rabbi.
Reverend Bernard, you are personally and specifically invited, and I will accompany you every step of the way. Well, you are part of our. You are
Elder,
part of our family, my dear brother.
Be careful, well, Elder. He only travels on a private plane. He doesn't go on, you know, commercial.
Yeah, but tell him the whole story. It's your private plane that I travel on only your private plane.
And kosher food.
Yeah. So listen, you know, one of the things that comes out of also the solidarity of human family and understanding that we're all connected is this whole passion for the common good. Elder Buckner, you and I join hands, our congregation and your organization. And you were very, very generous. We did a little press conference and whatnot a week ago. Our food pantry has fed over 72,000 people throughout the last 7 months of COVID. And you were so kind to contribute pallets of food for both our Long Island and Brooklyn campus. And those are the kind of things that I find as common ground that we can work together in spite of the differences in our traditions. And I want to just publicly thank you for your efforts, your work, you know, and just your generosity with that.
Reverend, let me add to that. And at the last meeting of the Commission of Religious Leaders, I remember the Elder Buckner coming over to me and say, look, we don't just want to feed the Christian community. We want to help the Jewish poor as well. And we'll make, you know, foods available to those who are hungry in your community too. And I mean, that's something I was very taken by that when I was out again in Salt Lake City. To see the outreach to the poor, you go into a store where people use credit cards. And whether you're poor, whether you're affluent, you have the same credit card. And so nobody knows who's not able to pay and who is able to pay. And you put your goods on the, you know, on the counter and you know, that you're given. And to me, that anonymous support, not knowing who's indigent, who's affluent, that's what religion wants. From all of our traditions, that's the way to give. Without all of the public plaudits, I'm doing it because it's the right thing to do. It's a mitzvah, as we say.
And isn't it beautiful that we can engage in these collaborations without fear of being converted? Because that's the big deal. We think that we can't sit down at the table and address the common good without feeling that we have to convert. And that's not true. If that happens, that's you know, part of the course of life. But that's not the fear that we should have. We should be able to appreciate and embrace our own traditions and sit down at the table and say, okay, what are the issues in society that we can collectively come together and address? I think, and we're going to need more of that considering the climate, the times that we're in right now. We saw so many middle class as well as working class people coming to that food pantry looking for food because they lost their jobs.
Yeah.
Well, both of you, to be honest, have been such a light. And I've always, you know, reflected on the fact that we have got to be a light to the world, not just a reflection of it. That mantra to me is the only conversion we need to be a light. You know what I mean? It's like converting our hearts and minds to helping each other, converting our thoughts and our process to elevating each other. And Reverend Bernard, you have a fantastic mechanism there by which people can come and feel like they can find ways to be fed and to be nurtured. So I'll be honest, it's been a pleasure. I mean, part of our distribution of food is to recognize and honor our 200-year history. I mean, it was 200 years ago, as I mentioned previously, that our first, you know, prophet in this dispensation received his visitation. And that meant something to us. That was personal to us. It was important to us. It taught us about, you know, revelation and ideas that keep coming to us. So how better to do that than to provide an opportunity, which we just keep finding a way to give back. But as you mentioned, Rabbi, in ways that don't have to be public, you know, even though the mention of it, it's about, I want to encourage everybody who may be listening today, find ways to give back to the community. Find ways to provide in your own ways food and shelter for the poor and the needy. And that's what the best thing we could possibly do.
Let me talk about the conversation just for a minute, Rabbi, because I know how the community of color, the black and brown community, felt when Barack Obama became president. And, you know, we're not a monolithic community. We have conservatives. We have, you know, we have liberals. We have Democrats, Republicans, independents, centrists. But there was this sense of pride that a person of color could get that far in American society and become president. Mitt Romney, who is openly and unashamedly Mormon, he got to the place where he was running for president of the United States. How did that impact the Mormon community, after considering the history of 200 years in this country?
I think one of the things it did is it did open the doors. It allowed people to ask questions. I had people asking me, you know, are you Christian? And it allowed me to say the Church of Jesus Christ, it's central to what we believe. We want to be like him. Those questions wouldn't have come had he not been at least visible. I think it also provided an opportunity for people to inquire into the purpose of our temples and genealogy and family history. And so I hope, and Reverend Bernard, you'll be a better judge of this in as you've seen, but I hope it enlightened people that there is, similar to John F. Kennedy in Catholicism,
right,
that there isn't necessarily a great fear when people have core beliefs and are centered on those beliefs and still in public service. So that was, that's what I observed, and that's what I hope will be a consistent going forward, greater knowledge, greater understanding, and greater partnership and unity.
Hmm. So, and as I reflect back on political history, Harry Reid was a Senate leader on the Democratic side, member of the Mormon community, yep. Am I right?
That's so, correct. Harry Reid, we've got a number of them. Gordon Smith, who was the senator from Oregon.
Right.
You know, so there's been a lot of leaders.
So how do you deal with the politics and the religion? You know, we always talk about where's the divide? What are we able to do, not able to do? I mean, when Mitt Romney was running for president, there was no official Mormon endorsement. Am I right?
No, we don't endorse, promote, or oppose political parties. We don't even our church buildings, et cetera, are not to be used for partisan issues. But we do encourage people to speak out on nonpartisan ways for issues, family. We spoke of marriage. You know, there were things that were specific, encouraging members to engage in their citizens in their communities, trying to get them to vote, however they may choose to, and becoming informed about issues. I mean, these became fundamental to being good citizens. But no, the goal, and there are some that will speak as individuals as if they speak as church members, and they're not when they're speaking of specific political parties or ends. Harry Reid was very, very good for people of faith and our faith. Mitt Romney as well, Gordon Smith. I mean, there are numerous members of Congress that have over the years been members of our faith. And it just is critical that we recognize that we do not speak, preach, or otherwise direct partisan discussions within our faith, but issues that become important to our faith are those that we should engage in on a community level.
Can you just talk about a dedicated temple versus one that has not been dedicated? Because I know we have visited temples, but as you know, there's a policy, official policy of the Mormon Church. Talk about that.
Yeah, we have 167 temples worldwide, and many more announced. In the temple are sacred ordinances that take place, a marriage or a sealing, as we call it. There are ordinances of salvation. There's baptisms for the dead. There's things that we're all aware of that aren't secretive. They're just sacred. And prior to the dedication of that temple, it's opened up to the public to come visit and see all the elements of the temple and the ordinances that take place therein. It goes back to the Ancient of Days, Solomon's Temple. And so the pre-dedication is open to the public to come see. Post-dedication, the sacred ordinances occur there. And then when we renovate, like they're doing in Salt Lake right now, they're renovating the Salt Lake Temple, there will be rededications that will occur. And it's simply to dedicate the building for the sacred use for which it's been built. Chapels, as you know, are open to the public and available for worship and use throughout the week for anyone and everyone.
All right. I talk about there was also, you know, the misunderstanding in terms of marriage How many spouses? Can you clarify that for people who may not know of what the official policy is?
Well, having been three generations before me, my experience, other than the fact that I know that somewhere back in my history it exists, there was a period of time in which polygamy had been it was a part of the populace of the church. It was a very small group, but since the 1890s, there has been absolutely no. I mean, there was the manifesto that was declared that there should be no polygamy, no plural marriages. In fact, the church has nothing whatsoever to do with the practicing of polygamy and practicing any plural marriage. They're excommunicated, which is the most serious penalty of the church. So we're back 130 years at a time in which the manifesto in Utah was declared that there would be no practicing of polygamy. So sometimes you'll get stories in the news about, they'll put them in quotes, a Mormon group in certain parts of the world that are practicing polygamy. They have nothing to do with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and haven't for over 120 years.
Let me ask you a question, because today, from the stats that I understand, Mormons are the most Republican of any faith. Is that true, and why is that?
Well, I'll give you two answers. One answer is I don't know that that's accurate, but in some ways it may not surprise me. The reason being is that a significant portion of our faith is outside of the United States. So I would say that you might find that members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints have core values that sometimes align with the more family-centric politics. I don't know that that's always the case. I think more aligned with Christian values. And again, I don't know that any party aligns very well. I think that you will find members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints are compassionate. There's a deep-seated care for the poor and the needy. So I don't know where that falls on the political spectrum. But it's the right question, Reverend. I just don't know with the moving parties. I mean, I remember as a young student, they used to say which president had the largest buildup of military history, and it was Kennedy and Reagan. in my history, and they're like two different parties. So the parties sometimes move, but the core values, I think that many of us embrace.
That's why I asked the question. Because 2014 survey by Pew Research, they figured it about 70% Republican when it comes to Mormons. And, my guess is, like me, it's about certain values, like family, like order, a certain structure and belief in how society should be arranged and what the best ways to live in it is that brings us there. That's why I asked the question.
Right.
Yeah, no party and no ism seems to align perfectly
with anybody.
It's the core center.
All right. But I think many of us, we go in there, we say, which party aligns more closely with our values first? And how do we select a party that has made values that are important to us a priority to them? We've come to the end of the segment. I just think there's a wonderful quotation attributed to John Lennon. Being honest may not get you a lot of friends, but it'll always get you the right ones. And I think that we're very fortunate that we can have a sit-down discussion honestly, openly, without fear of any consequences. And we've come a long way where we were. And it's very, very heartening for Reverend, I know I speak for him, and for me, to be able to say that we were with you all the way and look at where we are today. So Elder David Buckner, thank you so much. Your friend, your family.
Thank you. Thank you. You are dear friends, and I am honored to be united with you in purpose as people of faith. It's a real privilege.
All right, our friend. God bless.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with more of the Rev and the Rabbi.
And the Rabbi.
Reverend A.R. Bernard, Rabbi Joseph Pachasnik, the Rev and the Rabbi. Talk Radio 77 WABC and the all-new WABCradio.com.
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Joseph Pachasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard. Now, I'll tell you, Rabbi, there was a time early on, many, many, many years ago, decades ago, that the Mormon church was off limits to me as a Christian. And this is what I was indoctrinated in when I, you know, came into Christianity. I went into the evangelical world right away. And Mormonism was taboo because they were judged as not being, you know, real Christians, yeah, et cetera. You know the deal.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I think also, as we look back at our traditions, we evolve. We evolve as people. Our traditions evolve. And you use the word mature in our discussion. We do mature. Mm-hmm. And as we are, we're not threatened by the other. We recognize we're enriched by the other. So I remember when I first became a rabbi, I'm sure the same is true when you became a reverend. We used to look at some of these round tables. They all look the same. It was almost the same configuration, right?
Yes.
You had the same groups represented, and there were so many others that weren't there.
Yeah.
And look at where we are today. Look at where we are. We're always asking who else needs to be here without that thought of let's not allow this person to enter. So we've all matured.
I will tell you this point in my theological journey, the study of God, like God can be studied, but from what is revealed, I don't get the impression that God, if he's God, really, would be so insecure that he's terrified by people who don't agree with him.
There's room, there's room in that house for more rooms, and that's your tradition, and we subscribe to that. You know, the world was built in an expansive fashion, I think we always have to ask, who is not here? Who's being excluded? And whether that's in a humanitarian way, dealing with, you know, charity, whether it's dealing with membership, we always have to include people. Too many people feel excluded. They feel left. They don't care about me. And we have to prove them wrong.
That is so true, Rabbi.
Yeah.
Well,
all
good
right.
Program.
Excellent.
I mean,
thank
every week
so
is
much.
A great program. I mean, I don't think we've ever hit a foul ball, have we?
Well, now that you've said it, now that you've thrown out that possibility,
now that I brought it up, right?
Oh my God, now I'm afraid to come back next week.
All right. No,
we'll
pressure.
Yeah.
Till next time.
Thanks so much.
God bless.